Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Writing Mama Show here at BTR Worlds of Ink Network with your host, V.S. Grenier, and myself, Irene Roth. It's truly an honor to be here with you today. It's Monday, June the 11th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. As always, the Writing Mama Show and all our other shows can be listened to live here on Worlds of Ink Network, or you can listen to it on demand as well at any time you'd like at the same address or on iTunes. Just search for World of Ink Network on Block Talk Radio. The chat room is also open today to post your questions. If you have a call-in question for our guest, please call 714-242-5259. That's 714-242-5259.
Thanks, Irene. It's great to be here with you again. I feel like on Mondays we're always trying to remember what show we're doing because lately we've been doing both children's and then adult books. So it's like, are we doing stories for children or is it the Writing Mama Show?
That's right.
So I think last week I kept screwing it up. So anyway, so it's just great to be here to do the Writing Mama Show. It's one of those shows that, you know, we usually do as a special show because typically we tend to have a lot more children's book authors that Irene and I tend to review and interview. So it's always fun when we get to break from that genre, even though we love it, and to actually talk about something that's more adult in nature. And when I say adult, I just mean 18-plus readers. I don't mean erotica. Please don't think that at all. I swear, my family thinks I'm funny every time I clarify that. I'm like, well, you know, it's just, I don't know, maybe because I used to work in lingerie, so that's why my brain just automatically, I need to make sure that I'm not erotica. So anyway, which is definitely not what our book today is, we have author Laura Smith with us today, and her book, In All Things Giving Thanks When Hope is Lost, is a very motivational and inspirational book. It's actually more of a memoir. It's her life story with the inspirations and lessons that she has learned and, of course, how she's pulled closer to God. So it also has the religious undertones. It's a very non-denominational book. I just want to make that very clear because I know some people sometimes think, oh, religion, okay, you know, whatever the author's religion is, I'm probably not, and they tune out. Well, it's not. It's a very non-denominational. It's just if you believe in any form of religion, you will love the inspiration and motivation that is in this book and the struggles that she has gone through with the different circumstances that she's encountered throughout her life, starting from being pretty much a teen bride to, you know, life now with her new husband, well, her second husband, I should say new husband, because they've been married for a while, and her children. So, Laura, we welcome you to the show. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So, I was talking to you before our show started, I don't like to get into too much of everybody's background because I love when you guys share. But please share with us your background because you're not just an author. You actually work in medical coding and have been in other things as well. So I would love for you to kind of share that and a little bit about, you know, who you are and what brought you to writing this book.
Sure. I do work in medical coding. I started out working at a nursing home as a certified nursing assistant and became very interested in the medical records aspect of the medical field And so I went back to school for medical secretary, and there I learned some coding skills and just found that the coding really, really struck my interest. And I decided I wanted to work my way up into that field, and here I am. I'm now doing medical record audits for an insurance company, so I'm a little bit deeper into the coding than the first starting. But my husband and I currently live in northern Minnesota. Our two daughters, my two daughters from a previous marriage, are now living on their own, raising their own children. I have three grandchildren. The oldest is 7, then a 5, and a 4-year-old. And they are just amazing, amazing little children. I just love them.
Definitely probably keep you busy being a grandma, too.
Definitely. And the two youngest are boys, and so we kind of call them double trouble. They're constantly.
Well, that's nice that you have some, you know, grandchildren that are boys, considering the fact that, you know, you had your two girls. So that's kind of a nice change of pace to now be dealing with little boys.
It is. Boys are so different. When they were first born, I looked at my husband and said, I don't know what to do. They're boys. I don't know anything about boys. What do we do? So it's been a learning experience, but it's been a wonderful one.
Yeah, my mom was in the same boat with you. My first is a boy, and I was her only child, so she only knew girls. And, I mean, she has brothers that were younger than her that she helped a little bit with, but it was very different to all of a sudden, you know, have this little, because she helped watch him for the first 2 years when he was younger and I worked full-time. You know, it was, she was like, oh, my gosh. It's just so different. He's so active. He climbs. He's in everything.
And tease. I think it's natural born into all boys to be teases.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So you wrote this book, which is actually ended up being a series. The series, of course, being In All Things. And the first book is Giving Thanks to Giving Thanks When Hope Seems Lost, which is your story, pretty much. And what you encountered, you know, what you've encountered throughout your life, from being graduating high school as a senior to instantly getting married right after high school graduation. Actually, you didn't even go to your high school graduation. You got married on graduation day, correct?
No, actually, it was
okay.
2 weeks after, exactly 2 weeks after. So
okay.
We were planning a wedding during that time, but
which, you know, I remember when I was graduating, just getting the notice, you know, notices out about come to my graduation was crazy enough. Plus, you know, having to practice and practice and practice as a senior, going up there and getting your diploma, not that it's that difficult, but they make you practice like crazy. I just couldn't even imagine trying to, you know, being married and knowing what that was like, planning a wedding at the same time. Oh my gosh.
It was interesting. It was interesting. We had to hurry, though, with the wedding. My parents were moving, actually, across the country, and so I would be left without a home and a place to go. So we hurried up and planned the wedding and got me married off before they left.
Wow. Yeah. Now, because I worked on the book. Sorry, I'm losing my voice and I have allergies at the same time. Because I worked on the book with Halo, because I'm one of the editors over there. So I've watched, you know, the whole process of your book getting published. And I remember the first time when it was just, you know, a rough manuscript before it had been edited, you know, formatted for publication, I think, reading your story and reading about how, you know, you ended up marrying this town rebel.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously it was because you didn't want to leave Minnesota. You know, two, it was, you know, you thought he was the love of your life. And just the beginning of your story, I mean, I really could relate to it. I didn't marry right out of high school. I didn't end up with my first until I was 20 years old. But, you know, he ended up having drug and alcohol addiction and was verbally abusive. And I ended up leaving him when I was 8.5 months pregnant with my son, just because I realized after he threw a baseball and nearly missed my head and embedded in the wall behind me that, it was time to go. So when I read your story, just the beginning, you really hooked me because I was able to relate to it just for my own personal reasons. But I was really taken in at how raw and open and honest you were about that relationship. So I'm just kind of curious, because you talked a little bit about it in the book, but how did you meet him, and from when you met him to when you finally left, how did your viewpoint of him and the marriage change? Because, I mean, I think sometimes people really struggle with that, especially when you're young. You know, I mean, my sister got married when she was 19. I kept saying, you should wait later, you should wait till you're older. And I didn't remarry until I was 26. And I was really glad, because my viewpoint on dating and marriage and figuring if somebody was the right person for me at 26 was so different from when I was 20 years old. I mean, it is dynamically different. So I'd love for you to kind of share a little bit about that and your story with that a little bit, because I think it's really important for, you know, younger people to understand that we're not as mature as we at that time think we are. And we
exactly.
don't see things as clearly as well.
That's right. I was very rebellious at that age. We lived on a dairy farm, and I hated it. I couldn't stand any part of living on a dairy farm, although now I'm very thankful for it and my upbringing and things that I've learned. But I hated going to school. I always thought I smelled like barn and like cow, and I didn't, of course, but it just made me very self-conscious. And my dad back then was very mean. He was verbally abusive as well, and perhaps that's what I saw in my first husband, too, is because he was similar to my dad. I know I've heard sometimes we're attracted to someone that's similar to what we're accustomed to. And being rebellious, I used to go with friends to parties, and that's where I met him. And, of course, he promised me the world, and, you know, I was a farmer's daughter, a young, untouched girl, and he just charmed me right into that relationship. And I believe he loved me. I really do. and I certainly loved him at the time. But going through the years that we were married, it just became more and more apparent to me that he was not committed to me. He was not committed to the family that we had started to make. My daughter was born a year and a half after we were married, my first one. And then a year and a half later, my second one. And he never stopped with the partying and the drinking. And later I found out there were drugs involved. and then we tried to move to Arizona, where my parents had moved to kind of start fresh and get away from old influences. And unfortunately down there he got connected with another bad situation and found out that they were dealing drugs through the car lot that he was working at. And so he felt that we would be better moving back home into people that he was more familiar with that could help him find a job. And so we tried that. And after another year or so of trying that, I found that he was taking checks from the back of my checkbook in order to buy drugs, and he was forging my name. And I, of course, I had to put this checking account in my name only because I knew he would probably try to take money out of there if it wasn't in my name. So when I discovered that he was doing that, I just knew that there was no more to it. And did I want to raise my children in this kind of environment? Did I want them to learn that way of life? No, I didn't. I wanted better for them. So I left and filed for divorce and started out on my own.
Yeah, which I really commend you for. I mean, that is such a hard thing. And trust me, I understand that. I didn't realize when I was with my son's father. Because we had gone through rehab once together, you know. Not that I did drugs, but, you know, I stood by him and supported him when he went through rehab. And
yeah.
Thought he was, you know, things were better. And then, gosh, I went to go buy some groceries and was told that, you know, they couldn't take my check. And this was back before, you know, when they would run your check and they'd do the whole, you know, people still wrote checks. You didn't really use your credit card or debit card back then very often.
Yeah.
You know, same situation. And I was like, how in the heck is, you know, is my account bad? You know, I thought it was very odd, and I called, and I was like, had no money, and I was like, what the heck is going on? And had to go to my bank and found out that, yeah, he was doing the same thing, forging my name, and had even memorized my driver's license number and everything. Oh, wow. Like, oh, my
oh,
God.
My.
Yes.
Oh, my
and it is the most interesting thing, because you're like, this person is supposed to love you, and you're supposed to support each other, and you know, and all of a sudden, you know, here they are, you know, just another way of betraying you. And so, like I said, when I read your story, I mean, I remember telling Lisa Yumina this, I was like, oh, my gosh. It's almost like reading my story, almost. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was so close to home. It was unbelievable. Yeah. And I just, because, I mean, I started writing after my second daughter was born, and, you know, I finally started deciding to sit down and maybe write some of my stories, you know, like true stories, and sharing just kind of the things I've learned. But I've always held back, and so I really think it's amazing that you've been able to, you know, sit here and actually share your story with people, because it is such a hard thing. So, which brings me to what was the key thing that made you sit there and go, okay, you know, maybe I do need to share my story, because you know, a lot of people have stories that they think about, you know, oh, you know, people can learn from this kind of thing, but they hesitate because it's, you know, trying to open yourself that much to the world is so hard. So where was the turning point for you where you decided, you know, this is something you had to do?
After I wrote the journal, it originally began as a journal through a time after I'd had a miscarriage. My second husband and I had just desired to have a child together so badly, and then we found out that it was not going to be possible. My husband is unable to have children at all after testing, and there was just no possibility. I mean, there was absolutely no way. And I remember my heart was just broken, because that was the longing of my heart. And I know God's word says that he gives us the desires of our heart. And so I would just cry out to him, God, I know you can do this. You know, we just desire to have this child together so badly, you know, and this is a desire of my heart. And so can you please make this happen? Well, and years later, after we'd given up, and we were busy raising a child that was bipolar and extremely difficult. She was in and out of mental care facilities. The oldest daughter, she was in and out of back surgeries. She's got neurofibromatosis. And so much was going on in our life at the time. And I started feeling sick, and I just thought it was stress, and it just didn't go away and didn't go away. And finally I went to the doctor, and he said, well, is there any way you could be pregnant? And I laughed. And I said, well, only if it's an immaculate conception, and I only think that happened once in history. and so he says, well, let's do a test just to rule that out. And we did, and later that afternoon he called me down to his office. I was working at the same clinic, and I thought, oh, my goodness, you know, it's something horrible. And I braced myself, and I walked in, and he says, you're pregnant. My jaw dropped to my chest, and all I could say was, and he just said, honey, are you okay? Do you need me to call someone? And I said, no, but I'll need a copy of those test results, because I don't think my husband's going to believe me. So,
I was, that's quite a, oh, wow, that's something.
Amazing. And then a little bit into the pregnancy, we were 3 months along and very excited for this new addition to our family. The kids were getting along. It was just amazing. That was a miracle also, that they were getting along. But one night I started having horrible pains, and he brought me into the ER, and I found I was having a miscarriage. And I remember for weeks after that just sitting in the bathroom in the middle of the night with a towel to my face, just crying out to God. You know, I was so mad at him, and I, you know, you can do this, you did this, but now it's gone. You know, my husband thought he was a hypocrite for taking this life, and it was a very difficult time. And so I just started to journal through that pain.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't able to go to church through that time because I was so broken. I didn't want other people to see my brokenness.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I was ashamed. I thought it was something I did to cause the miscarriage, but I was not able to go to church for a while. And then after I was finally able to go back, it was, I believe, an Easter Sunday. I asked my mom to go with me just so I wasn't alone. And during the worship time, I remember just feeling, you know, I have to let this go. If I'm going to go on and be there for my family, I have to let this pain go.
Yeah.
And so I remember raising my arms and I just started worshiping, and I just told God, I said, you know what, God, I know this must have happened for a reason, and I don't understand it in my human eyes and my heart, but I love you and I trust you in whatever you do in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I will follow you forever. And
wow.
God, and it's amazing, some people say this is crazy, but I was standing in heaven, I believe, and it was just amazing. I saw, when I looked up, I saw Jesus sitting on a stump, and he had a baby on his lap. And I just tried to listen, and I heard the baby say to Jesus, now how a baby can talk, I don't know, that has to be God. but he said, Jesus, is that my mommy? And he pointed, and I looked to where he was pointing down, and he was pointing directly to me, standing in church, worshiping.
Uh-huh.
And I saw the church and the congregation, and he said, Jesus said, yes, that's your mommy. And he said, oh, would you bless her? And he said, I do every day.
Oh. That is so moving. It is. It is. Yeah, I don't. I mean, obviously your book's very different, which is probably the first time anybody's going to ever hear me on my show ever talking about religious note, because I don't. Irene knows that. But
yeah.
One of the things that my faith believes is that moms who lose their children, my mom had a miscarriage a year and a half after she had me. She had a stillbirth, so she never, you know, got to raise her kid. And it was hard on her. And then after that, she was never able to have children ever again. So that's why I'm her one and only, and that's like the biggest thing for her, because she always wanted more kids. And I remember her telling me, because I had asked her when I had my kids, I'm going to get emotional usually. but you know, just asked her, you know, how hard that was for her, and she told me, she says, you know, the thing that always consoled me was how we believe that, you know, one day we'll get to raise the kids that, you know, we lost due to miscarriage, stillbirth, whatever. And so I really hope that it is very true for, you know, women like yourself, because, as you know, having two kids, you know, it's such an amazing experience. So hopefully that will happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also, it's such a moving story, Laura, what you have here is just an amazing, you know, story. I read it over and over again, and I was moved to tears many times myself, just a box of Kleenex and me was the way I read the book. And, you know, regardless of how many times I read it, it was the same experience for me. I was also wondering one other thing. They say, you know, that when authors have a very touching, you know, experience like this, and when they write through it, whether it's journaling or whether it's writing a memoir type of book, that it really helps them cope with the feelings and the experiences that they've gone through. Did you find that this did that for you?
Absolutely. As I was writing, you know, I would look things up in the Bible to the different feelings I was experiencing, depression, hopelessness, and I was just so inspired looking those things up, and it just reaffirmed my faith and knowing that he was with me.
Yeah. And the worst of the pain, too, would have probably been helped through your journaling. As you started journaling, you probably felt a little bit less, you know, less in pain, did you? Or
Yes, it definitely eased the pain. And once after the first time I shared the story in church, it was months before I was able to even talk about it.
Okay.
The experience that I had that one Sunday, just because it was, for me, it was my own. It was something that God gave me that was very special for me to heal me.
Mm-hmm.
And then later I just felt that he wanted me to share this story.
Mm-hmm.
And what he did for me. And so I did one Sunday, and I'll never forget it.
Oh, I'm sure.
There was a lady in church, towards the back of the church, and she was fairly new to our church. I really didn't know her that well, but as I was sharing about the vision, I remember hearing just a loud cry, and I looked back, and there was a woman in the center aisle on her knees.
Oh, wow.
And some of our older prayer warriors in the church had gathered around her, and I found out later that she had lost a baby 2 years prior, and she was not able to get past that until I shared my story.
Oh, that's wonderful. That is wonderful.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you will help millions of others. You know, anybody that reads the book will be totally, you know, healed by it, and will be able to start the healing process.
Oh, I sure hope so. That's the cry of my heart, that others will be able to find the healing that I found.
Yeah.
You know, because I know in your book you talked about, you know, because obviously this is almost toward the last, like, third of the book, when you talked about having your miscarriage and your husband definitely having such a hard time. And trust me, not that I've had a miscarriage or lost a child with my husband, my current husband, but he works for emergency responders, so he deals a lot with, you know, kids being kidnapped or deaths, and, you know, be it car accidents, accidental deaths, whatever, gun-related type deaths. And I've asked him many times when he comes home and kind of shares the stories with me, you know, well, what, because I hear how emotional he gets about it, and I'm just like, how did you deal with this? And when I was working on your book and I read it after it was completed, I got to that part. The way your husband reacted really makes me think that's how my husband would react, that he would basically, like, just turn his back on God, turn his back on pretty much the world, and shut everybody out, because he would just be so mad about the whole scenario.
Yeah.
And that is so hard on a marriage, because, you know, you're both hurting. And at the same time, you know, especially as a woman, because we're more emotional creatures, and we tend to show our emotion, where guys tend to bottle it up, very much like your husband did, you know, to not be able to turn to your partner and have them comfort you. So kind of talk about that, because I think that's probably the hardest part about the healing process when you lose a child, you know, for whatever reason. Like I said, you know, they just, you know, be it death, you know, someone unfortunately takes them, and you have no idea what's ever happened to them. You know, it is so hard. I think for a lot of couples I know do break up, and you guys work through it and have stayed together, which is amazing, because I know a lot of couples don't. It ends up actually tearing their marriage apart. So I'd love for you to kind of talk about that and what you think might have been some of the things that helped you guys get through it together versus not fall apart as a family.
Well, I had not shared that vision with him either, and I think some of it was we just were walking through this pain on separate levels. You know, I was suffering in my own way, and he was suffering in his own way, and it was kind of this unspoken pain that was just there, and we didn't talk real intimately about the loss until he shared with me how upset he was and angry with God, that he called God a hypocrite. You know, he hates abortion, but yet he allows this baby to die, and he couldn't understand it. And so I shared my vision with him, and once I did, I looked at him, and he was in tears.
Mm-hmm.
And so it healed him, too, from that pain. And so I think, As married couples, being able to discuss the really deep things and not be afraid to share those things with your partner Don't keep it to yourself because it's not meant to be just for you. I can't stress that enough. Just communication is so important. And true, honest communication, you know, not just chit-chat every day, but discuss the real heart issues.
Yeah, I agree. And it's so hard because, especially I think now with how busy our lives are, with everything going on from technology to just the type of, you know, long hours a lot of people put in at work and stuff, to find those times as a couple in general is really hard. Which is why I think divorce is so prevalent now anyways, is because we are pretty much, you know, especially, like, you know, I mentioned my husband works for emergency responders. I mean, gosh, there was a time where he would work from 4 to midnight. So from 4 o'clock in the afternoon to midnight, he was out of the house. Well, that's when the kids were coming home. And so he was never around when the kids were really home, except on the weekends. And so there was, like, a huge disconnect where, you know, it didn't really feel like he was a part of the family. It was like he was a guest a lot of the time in the house. And so I can even imagine, I'm not saying that, you know, that was your husband, your situation, but, you know, just seeing how a lot of times it seemed like my husband and I were on different paths, to then have, you know, a miscarriage or to lose one of our, you know, kids that we already have, and then to deal with that when we're already, like, passing each other, you know, daily, would have, you know, I agree with you. It is so important that you do have those deep conversations when you can have them and make the time to try and have them, because, you know, it's easy to have, like you said, disconnect and to just be on different wavelengths, you know, even though you're experiencing a lot of the same stuff and not be communicating.
Yeah. We were struggling a little bit before the whole incident with the baby in our marriage. And I remember just crying out, God, bring him in, bring his heart closer to mine and mine closer to his. Help me to see him through your eyes and bring us closer together. And then this whole thing happened, and it did. I mean, it solidified our relationship rather than tearing us apart.
It's wonderful.
When you guys went through struggles even before this, because, I mean, you mentioned, you know, of course, that you have your daughter who's bipolar, and then your other daughter who, you know, with all the different surgeries she's had for her illness. I mean, that, especially when you're, and I, not that my son has a bunch of medical problems, but it was hard enough with my son being allergic to, like, everything from under the sun. When I married my husband now, for him to realize we can't do this, or we have to be really careful because if he gets sick, he can't take any medications until he's, like, almost on his deathbed because he's just allergic to, like, the whole entire medical everything. And so it was hard adapting. But, I mean, when I read your story about, you know, having two daughters and both of them having some significant, you know, issues going on in their own little lives, to then be melding in, you know, this new dad in their life is not an easy thing. So what was that kind of, I know what it was like because I read your book, but, you know, can you share with us a little bit what it was like, you know, meeting him, you know, making sure, you know, obviously you want to make sure he's the right fit. You don't, you know, being a mom, you know, being a remarried mom myself, you want to marry somebody who doesn't just love you but also loves your child or children. So I'd love for you to kind of share a little bit about that and what you guys went through in that process, because I know that was also a struggle in your guys' life and a lot of ups and downs for you as well.
Well, for us, and if I lose you, I apologize. My mom's phone, I'm on her phone, and it might go dead, but I have my cell phone, and so I'll call right back if I do. I'm so sorry. But it was a second marriage for both of us, and so we had determined in our hearts that it didn't matter what happened, we were going to stick together through anything. And certainly it was anything that we had to stick together through. And so,
I think we might have.
Are you there, Laura?
Oh, I'm still here. I'm just calling.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I thought I lost you.
Not yet.
But we, you know, we were very adamant about working through our problems, and at any cost, we would just talk things through. And his family was very accepting of me as well as my two daughters, and I think that was a huge help in getting through some of the tougher stuff that we faced.
I think it's amazing, you know, just the stuff that you guys have faced. And even as a single mom, there was one part in your story that really tugged, not that a lot of it didn't tug at my heartstrings, but you know, it really tugged my heartstrings, which is when one of your daughters was sick and you didn't have a car. And of course, your first husband being the kind of person he was and not really having any money in the house, so you guys didn't have the heating that you needed. That just, it made me want to go find him and just like shake him and go, what was wrong with you? You know, you have this baby in the house and they're sick and there's no heat and you're in Minnesota and where's your brain, you know? Did you ever during that time, I mean, it came across me that way, and that's why I said, you know, you really, you know, when you wrote your story, you know, really wrote a very raw and open, you know, heartfelt story. I mean, you really did not hold much back. I'm sure you did to some degree just because most of us do to some degree hold stuff back, but, I mean, you really did lay a lot of it on the table. Did you ever at one time feel like a, and I hate using this term, but, you know, like a caged animal, like you just, you knew what you needed to do, but you just felt like you had no escape in the situation you were in? Because, I mean, I encountered that. I really did. Well, I just felt like no matter which way I turned, it's like I saw bars. And, like, I was just caged up like an animal and just I couldn't free myself from this awful, you know, hellhole that I put myself in. Did you ever
I sure did. I was a product of my own decisions and my own mistakes. And once, you know, my parents were gone and I saw really his true colors coming through, I just felt like there was nowhere to turn because now my parents were gone and I had no one there to be there for me, to support me. My sister lived nearby, but I didn't want to burden her. She had her own little family. And so I just felt like there was nowhere to turn, and I made this decision. And my mom told me something that her mother told her years ago when she got married, and she was struggling through some alcoholism with my dad, was that, you know, you made your bed, you lay in it. And so I had this in the back of my mind, and also being young and rebellious, I was going to prove them wrong. I was going to make this work no matter what. So I felt really there was no way for me to go to get myself out of this thing that I'd gotten myself into, and I needed to just suffer through it.
Which is such a hard thing, especially when you have, you know, little ones in tow. Which, like I said, I really can relate a lot to your story because I've been not in a lot of the same situations, but pretty dang close to them. And do you feel like your girls were really the light in your life, the shining beacon to help you get out of the hole? That's how I felt with my son. I tell him that every day, actually. And he's 16 now, and I still tell him, I said, if it wasn't for you, I'd probably still be in that mess. I mean, I keep telling him he's my angel here on earth because he's really what turned me around 100%.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
After I finally decided to leave him, and the reason I was my final decision was because of them. I did not want them to be raised in that type of a home environment, you know, where their dad was addicted to drugs, he was drinking, he was stealing. That's just not the life I wanted them to be raised in. And I left him and was alone with my children for quite some time and became very depressed. I just felt like, what did I do now? How do I live? How do I support my children? And I talked to my mom, and she just encouraged me. She says, you know, those girls are the only family that they have, really, because if anything should happen to you, look who they would go to. They would go to their biological father. Mm-hmm. And that would have been worse than me having stayed with him and being able to have some say in their raising. And so that just encouraged me to get help and to be there and not give up on our little family of three.
Mm-hmm.
And decided to go to school and make something of myself and be able to take care of them.
Boy, that's a real story of strength and courage. You know, it's wonderful. That's what women need to hear is that, you know, they don't have to stay in abusive relationships. You know, they can, you know, they can. It's not easy, but they
mm-hmm.
can, you know.
Yeah.
And they can do it. If they don't do it for anyone else, they should do it for their children, right? So,
right.
So that, you know, they can have a better life and so on and not maybe fall into some of these same abusive patterns, you know, that they're exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
Kids are so impressionable, aren't they, at such an early age? So it's important to take them out of, you know, abusive situations or possibly abusive situations and just give them a life that they really deserve, you know. So it just takes so much courage, yeah.
And that's what I love about your book so much is because, you know, even though it's dedicated to moms and dads who have lost a child, you know, be it to abortion, to miscarriage, to, you know, some type of other death. You also touch on, like Irene said, you know, being strong, standing up, getting out of an abusive relationship as well. You know, the struggles that your daughters went through, you know, dealing with that kind of a scenario, you know, melting a family together that, you know, you have a remarriage as well. I mean, you touch on so many different things that, you know, back when we were all growing up, and not saying we're all old, but, you know, you know, now I think people's like, oh, well, this is so common that they kind of are numb to the pain that they're in because, you know, divorce is more prevalent nowadays. You have a lot more broken homes. You have a lot more drug and alcohol addiction out there. You have, you know, I think there's definitely a lot more abuse out there because of just the stresses from, you know, the more demands that we have from work to what's going on with the economy that I think, you know, we just kind of, in our brains, in the society to some degree, just go, well, you know, this is how it is, and it's always been this way, and we just kind of numb ourselves to it. And, you know, like I said, when I read your book, I mean, it really made me realize, you know, this the way it is isn't okay, and we need to fix it. We need to heal ourselves, and that's the only way things are going to get fixed is if we heal ourselves from within first, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then as a society. And I love that because I think more people need to talk about this stuff because we don't. I don't think we talk about it enough as a whole. And it's sad. It's unfortunate. You know, being someone who's gone through it myself, you know, in different circumstances to reading your story, I mean, I'd love to see less people have to go through the learning curves that you and I have gone through, Laura, because, you know, it's not, and I trust me, my kids hear it from me all the time, like, you know, I've told them some of the stuff I did. I said, but I tell you this because I don't want you to do it. I want you to hopefully learn from it, not because I was like, yeah, I was just a stubborn. I was just like, I will prove you wrong, and just because you told me it's hot, I'm going to go touch it anyways, and it's just not the way to go through life, you know, to learn it the hard way versus
mm-hmm.
like, through other people's experiences. So I love the fact you're sharing your story with everybody and that you're open to doing that, hoping that, you know, you touch enough people to, you know, and even the ding-dongs like myself to go, no, I'm still have to figure it out for myself. You know, hopefully they'll listen too. I needed your book back when I was a teenager. Maybe I wouldn't have done half of what I did.
Yeah, I think a lot of teen girls need it, don't they, Virginia?
Oh.
I think. You know, if they can read the book, I think they can maybe share the, you know, like escape or at least not go into some of these real, you know, difficult relationships
mm-hmm.
and, you know, maybe they can spare themselves from a lot of pain, you know. So I can see all of that happening too. So for any teenager listening to this show, I think you should definitely purchase the book and read it, you know, definitely.
I totally agree because, like I said, I mean, luckily my sister has a healthy marriage, but I looked at her. I mean, I live in Utah, if you didn't know that, Laura. And being the state that it is, not that I'm bashing on any of the people here, because there's a lot of lovely, lovely people here, but unfortunately, because of it being a very dominant Mormon state, the philosophy is, you know, you marry young for the girls. And when I say young, I mean legal age 18 and up, but a lot of them are between 18 and 21. I kid you not, I remember my sister was graduating from high school. I want to say at least a third of her graduating class, a third of the girls, were already engaged.
Wow.
Really? I'm like, are you crazy? What is wrong with these people? What is their parents, you know? And I'm sure some of them will have great marriages, because I know high school sweethearts from when I was a kid who got married and are doing great, but generally they're not prepared for what life is going to throw at them. And so I totally agree with Irene's comment, because I see it here in this day. I can't tell you how many people, my husband will come home from work and we'll be talking, and he's like, yeah, did you hear about so-and-so? They're getting divorced, or they're having marital problems. I'm like, oh my gosh, they just had a kid. What the heck? You know, and it's just so sad to see. Because they don't realize what's in front of them. Yeah, and I don't think, and I've made this comment before, and I don't know, maybe you thought this with your first husband to some degree, but I remember with my son's dad that I call him Butthead, so I was trying to be nice. I don't even use his real name anymore. But I mean, I literally had it in my crazy, you know, young adult, you know, young 20-something-year-old brain that I can change him.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of girls think that. I mean, I know when I was in high school, I thought that with guys I dated, well, I can change him.
Yeah.
You can't change anybody. They have to want to change themselves.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's for sure. You know, it's funny you call him Butthead. I don't call my ex anything but ex.
Yeah.
We just have no contact, not only because of the difficulty that we went through and his connection to drugs, but we found out much later when my youngest was about, oh gosh, she was about 5 or 6, because she was in preschool and she was learning about good touch and bad touch.
Mm-hmm.
And she started having nightmares, and she wasn't sleeping through the night. And she started, one day, she was drawing pictures, and there were other kids at the house. And my oldest daughter came to me and says, Mom, you know, she's drawing icky pictures. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't imagine. I went and I looked at him, and I was shocked. My heart just sank. She was drawing things that no little girl should know anything about. Man's body parts and things like that, and I just felt sick to my stomach. Literally, I had to just step away for a few minutes and catch my breath, and then I sat down with her in a private room and asked her, you know, where she learned about this, and she named her biological dad. Well, he did this to me.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, she had also been sexually abused, and so that was, you know, in part of her not only being bipolar, later diagnosed, but PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and so she was receiving counseling for that and anger management due to that, and that was a battle in itself, besides bipolar, so...
Oh, wow.
So I don't have very good words for him, so I just call him.
Yeah, I would imagine. Oh, my goodness.
And
wow.
I understand. I can't refer to my ex because the fact that I was, except for the fact of my son, I try not to even think about the fact that we were together. That's why he's butt-head in my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes he gets biological father, if he's lucky.
Yeah. Yeah.
So And not an easy thing. And as a mom, I'm pretty sure, you know, you just probably wanted to just rip him in two.
I bet.
I definitely do.
How has it been with writing your book, working through, I mean, anger like that? I mean, because being a parent, I can definitely relate that, you know, if anybody ever did anything along those lines to any of my children, the only thing that would keep me probably from killing the person would be the fact that I don't want to be in prison and not be there to raise my kids. Have you found sharing your story, writing about, you know, these things that have happened has helped you work through that anger, or are there other things that you've done too to help work through it? Because, you know, I'm pretty sure anybody listening to the show is going, oh my gosh, he would be dead. I mean, it's just automatically when you think of the parent, you're just like, dead.
Yeah, I know my current husband, that's what he wanted to do, and when we had investigators looking for him and kept telling us, oh, we can't find him, he lives in a different county and they don't get back to us, they're not cooperating, they went to pick him up and he ran out the back door. My goodness, can't you run? You know, why can't you get him? And my husband told the officer one time, you know, he better not show up on our property. He'll be met by a Smith & Wesson, and that's not something you want to tell the police. But it was difficult to let it go, and I don't know. My husband still, you know, he's very angry. But I think that's one of the things that God's healed also in my heart, and actually in my youngest daughter's heart, too. He's healed that, and she's been able to forgive him. Forgiveness, you know, it's not for the other person. It's for you, and there's so much power that you gain once you forgive someone. You are living in a jail cell, in a sense, until you're able to let that go and receive the freedom and the healing that God has for you. And once I did let that go, you know, it doesn't mean I have to be his friend. It doesn't mean I have to have anything to do with him. It just means that I am letting go of that pain, and I'm forgiving him for what he did, so that I don't have to deal with it anymore.
And I think that is an amazing thing, because you know, when I, not that I have sure hate for anybody, because I don't, but you know, anytime someone upsets me and they don't apologize, and it's like, when you linger on it, you're right. It hinders you as a person. And my husband would look at me, he's like, I can't believe you're okay with it. That's how he puts it to me. I can't believe you're okay with it. I'm like, I'm not saying I'm okay with it. I just realized that I'm going to move forward. I'm not going to worry about it anymore. I'm going to just let it go. And the fact that I'm just going to forgive the person, even if they haven't asked for it, or even if you don't think they're deserving, because I need to move forward with my life. And now it's their problem and it's their issue they need to deal with.
Exactly. When you're living in unforgiveness, you're not able to think about anything else but that. And so what else could you be focusing your mind on that's constructive and good and other than that?
Right, yeah.
And I guess also you can't heal really unless you forgive, can you?
Right.
Yeah. Which is, it's all sort of wound up in one cluster of processes.
It is. It's amazing. I mean, even for, you know, those who aren't religious, you know, because, I mean, obviously those who are will say, well, you know, it's definitely a Christ teaching, you know, to forgive and, you know, to live the policy. Not that you have to forget, but, you know, to at least forgive and to move on. And you know, even if you don't believe in any religion, I mean, just being able to, you know, to realize, okay, I've done what I can with this situation. I need to now just realize that all I can, you know, I've done everything I can. It's time to just let it go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, take a deep breath and just say, okay, you know, when you're ready, you'll move on, hopefully, and hopefully we can, you know, either mend the bridge between us or decide that it's a bridge that should never be fixed and go on with our lives. But, you know, it is a very difficult thing. It's a very difficult philosophy, religious or non-religious, to really take on. So, I think it's amazing, and that's one of the things I really picked up from your book, is that you have learned how to do that, and not that it's been an easy thing to learn, but you have, you know, learned to come to those points in your life where you're sitting at that, you know, road, and you're going, do I go left or do I go right, and the only way to know which path to take is to really look deep inside myself and say, am I ready to take that step forward and not let this hang on me as baggage anymore?
Yeah. I think what made me turn the corner on being able to let go and look for the positives within the negatives. I believe there's always positives and negatives. My oldest daughter, later when she was out of high school, she wasn't married yet, but she got pregnant. And I remember thinking, you know, what are other people thinking of me? What they must think I'm a horrible mother. You know, my daughter's not married. She's pregnant. And I was just, I told my husband about it, and he was upset. He was in the other room. He always used to escape to the computer and play computer games. And I remember sitting there just wallowing in my own self-pity. Mm-hmm. And it's like, again, God spoke to my heart, and he said, what is wrong with you? You, of all people, should know what a blessing a baby is. And it was like a slap in the face, literally, back to losing my own baby, to the thought of, you know, this new life coming into our family, whether it was planned or not planned. You know, every life is a blessing. And from that moment on, I shared that with my husband, too, that very night. And from that moment on, we agreed that we would be there for her no matter what, you know, what it took, and we did. We were there for her, and thank goodness we were, because we almost lost them both during childbirth.
Yeah, because she's the one who's had the multiple surgeries, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah. It was a physically challenging thing for her to have a child anyhow. So,
yes.
Yeah. And I remember you touching on that in the book as well. So I think that's amazing, because it is. It's hard. As I think about that with my 16-year-old, I'm like, heaven forbid he ever come home and go, Mom, guess what? I got someone pregnant. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I know I would completely come unglued. But in the same way, you know, I realize I need to be there for him, because, you know, the last thing I want is for a child's life to be taken, because that is not.
Yeah.
That's that in itself, and I think. Because I want to, you know, because you bring about the, you know, how the book is dedicated to, you know, those who have lost a child, you know, and you specifically mention abortion and miscarriage, and I think sometimes that these teenagers, or even, you know, under 25-year-old girls who, I don't think it affects the men as much, because they're not the ones who are carrying the child within them, but, you know, the girls who have the abortion. Because,
yeah.
You know, they're not ready to have a kid. They're not married to the person. It was a one-night stand. You know, and I'm not, and here I am going to be political on the show, which is another thing I never try and do. But I am pro-life in the fact I don't think anybody should. I'm going to sound like such a hypocrite when I say this, because I'm going to say I can be pro-life, and now you're saying you're not. I'm pro-life in the fact I don't think anybody should have an abortion just because, oops. I decided to sleep with my
mm-hmm.
boyfriend when I was 16 years old, got pregnant, and I didn't mean to. However, I am for abortion, because I think someone who's been raped should have the option, because dealing with rape in itself and then carrying that person's child in you psychologically can do a lot to a woman. So I'm okay with abortion in certain circumstances, okay? So I'm not total
mm-hmm.
pro-life, if that makes sense. But that's the thing. I think a lot of these kids think, oh, I'll just go have an abortion. And I don't think the girls, and I can talk about this because I've had enough friends who've had them when I was in high school. And I've been there myself. And it's like, my mom even mentioned it when I had my son. She's like, are you sure? She mentioned adoption after I had him. And I was like, are you kidding me? It was like over my dead body. But, you know, I've been there while I was mentally thinking these things as well with my son, because of everything that was going on with his dad. And I remember thinking back to my friends who went through it, and, you know, after high school and stuff, when they did it, I think because you're in that party mode still, a lot of the girls
mm-hmm.
are, they don't realize it. But I've talked to them now, you know, now we're, you know, approaching 40 years old, and a lot of them now have that regret, and it haunts them.
Wow.
It really
yeah.
haunts you. And,
yep.
And I people take, I think, sometimes that little life, even when it's just a few cells, in your body, very, they don't take it in a way that they should, and how, like you said, how special it is. So I think it's mm-hmm. amazing that, you know, especially being a parent standing by me, I couldn't believe my mom even suggested that when I was pregnant with my son, because being someone who wanted to have a bunch of kids and only ended up with one, I was like, really? Don't make him up, because she was really worried about me being a single mom with a kid at 21 years old. And, you know, I'm glad that even though I told her no, she stood by me, because it would have been very hard. It would have been very,
yeah.
very hard. And she's even told me she regrets even mentioning adoption to me back then, because, you know, how much your life, you know, would our lives would be different without him. And
yeah.
I just think it's amazing that you and your husband realize that as much as you want to strangle them at the time, that you were able to be there and support them at the same time, too, and see that
yeah.
blessing in their life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, speaking about abortion, when months later, you know, before I shared in church that very first time, I was praying about that when I just felt that he wanted me to share that, and God told me, well, not, of course, an audible voice, but I just felt he was speaking to my spirit. You know, this vision I gave you, it was for you for a time, but he said, I want you to share this message because I want people to know, not only women who have suffered from miscarriage, but women who have gone through abortions, and now they're struggling with dealing with those issues, because there's so many psychological issues that happen later in life, you know, remembering that time when you did go through that abortion. And I've heard some women hear babies cry the rest of their life in their head, and they can't get rid of it. He wanted this message out to these women to know that their babies are in heaven, and they're being raised by the Lord and the angels, and one day when they get to heaven, they will get to meet their children. They only need to, you know, accept the Lord and turn their life over, and they will see their children someday.
Yeah. Well, is there any other messages you'd like to share with our listeners today, Laura? I mean, I really encourage anybody, I mean, even if they haven't experienced any of the things you've experienced, just to read your book, and all things giving thanks when hope is lost, because no matter what people are struggling with, I mean, by reading your story, they'll realize that we all have that strength and that courage to push forward. You know, be it we put it in our faith, you know, we put it in, you know, the fact that we just believe in the human spirit, whatever, you know, wherever their, you know, thought process lies when it comes to religion or spirituality. I mean, it's such an encouraging, motivational story. I mean, you've gone through so much, and here you are. You know, I'm sure at times you don't feel like a strong woman, because, you know, we all sometimes feel defeated in our lives, but you've accomplished so much that you've, you know, and when I say that, by dealing with so much adversity to be where you're at now in your life, you really have accomplished a lot. It's been a very hard, treacherous road for you, but you have two beautiful daughters. You have grandkids that you just shared about. You have a loving husband who is still by your side. And even supporting you, sharing your guys' story, which is just phenomenal. I think my husband would probably say, I'm divorcing you if you share your story with me. Because he's so, not that he, you know, he can't open his feelings up to me, but he definitely does feel like his private life is his private one.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'd have to wait till he was dead to ever share anything after I met him. But, you know, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners? Because, I mean, it's just, you're just really an inspiration, you know, to anybody who comes
across you.
I mean, you're just, I'm glad I finally get to talk to you for the first time after reading your book, because, I mean, I was really moved, and I, like I said, I told Lisa, I was like, wow, wow.
Thank you. I would like to share that the book, you know, although originally intended for women who have suffered abortion or miscarriage and abortion, there have been men who have read it who have been so touched and changed by some of the other messages in the book. There was one gentleman who, he's also a writer, and he contacted me and said that he read the book, and he said I can't even put into words how this has touched me and caused me to really rethink so many aspects of my life, and he's reached out to estranged children that he hadn't had contact with for years, just through some of the openness and honesty that I shared in my book. And wow, I mean, this wasn't even intended for men per se, other than to heal through miscarriage as well, as it touched my husband when I shared the vision. But there's also a message within for men for other issues. So I'm just so thankful that this was able to get out and get published. And I just thank Halo, and I thank you for your editing, and it's just been a wonderful experience.
That's wonderful. Now, just so our listeners know, you are doing a World of Ink tour this month,
mm-hmm.
so they can go, of course, to theworldofinknetwork.com, and under Authors on Tour, they'll see your picture and Laura Smith, and they can click on the link to your tour. But you also have a Facebook page for the book.
I do.
As well, for, mm-hmm. And you also are on Twitter as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
okay.
I am on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn.
Okay, and LinkedIn. So you can definitely, anybody who wants to connect with Laura that way or find out more about her book, you can just obviously search for In All Things When Giving Thanks When Hope Seems Lost, or just type in Laura Smith. Probably both would be the best to search her out. And, of course, we have all your links as well. And then you also have a trailer, a little book trailer that you did you put it together, or did someone do that for you for the book?
I did put it together. It was kind of fun, and I used my own photography. I do photography on the side, too, so I used a lot of my, or all of my own pictures, so it was kind of fun.
I love it, because it's just little inspirational thoughts, and things about the book are in it, and I love the music. It's just such nice, soothing music, when you're looking at all the different pictures. I didn't know you took all the pictures. They're beautiful pictures.
Oh, thank you.
You're really good. I wish my basic pictures looked that clear. I think my handshakes when I take pictures, because they're always, they always seem like they're slightly out of focus.
Oh,
yeah. So you guys can go to YouTube and type in Laura Smith and All Things Giving Thanks When Hope Is Lost, and you can see her trailer. But you can also go to theworldofinknetwork.com, and it's there as well on her tour page, so you can see it there that way too. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the show, Laura, and just having you talk about what's inspired you, sharing some of your story with us. I really commend you, and just am inspired with the fact that you're just able to share, as openly as possible your story. I've read a lot of memoirs, and you can just tell it makes me think of Dragnet, the facts, ma'am, just the facts. And yours isn't like that. I mean, you really, it's like you just ripped open your chest and said, here it is. Here's my heart beating right in front of you. And this is everything that is, all the scars you see on it, these are the things that caused it. And I love that. It's just amazing that you can be that candid with the readership out there. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you for a great book as well. I think I'm going to put a few copies in my youth ministry files at my church, because I think girls should definitely read this book. And so I'm the head of the youth ministry in my church, so I think this is definitely a book that's going to be on our shelves for many people to read, and I'll be recommending it as well. So thank you for
wonderful.
Just a wonderful book, and it's really inspiring and wonderful.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I've just enjoyed talking and sharing a little bit about my book, and I can't thank you enough.
Okay. And just so our listeners know, too, I don't have the thing up in front of me, so I'm sorry, but I know Marcia has a couple of shows scheduled for A Good Story is a Good Story this month. The dates, I don't know exactly off the top of my head, so I'm sorry, and Marcia can get on my case later that I'm not doing a good job promoting her show. And then we do have...
Don't worry.
I just didn't pull it up today, I'm sorry. And then we do have a Families Matter show next, a week from this Wednesday.
Yep,
June the 20th. It's the 20th?
June the 20th, yeah.
June the 20th, okay. So it's a week from this Wednesday. And we will have a guest on that show. We're going to be talking about homeless people. So that will be a good show to listen in on. The author actually works in has worked in homeless shelters, wrote a book. It's a fiction book, but using a lot of the situations that she's come across working with the homeless. So it will be an interesting show, because we're just going to be kind of talking about that and ways that you can get involved in helping the homeless, and which is an important thing, especially with the nasty economy. It seems like there's more families out on the streets or close to being on the streets nowadays because of that. So it's definitely an important issue, I know. It's going to be a hard one. I used to go right by Skid Row in L.A., and so anytime I hear the word homeless, I just automatically picture Skid Row, all the cardboard boxes, and yeah, it's not a pretty sight. It's really sad. So that'll be one show. And then Fran Lewis has a couple of shows focused on discussion that she will be scheduling. And then, of course, on Saturday we have It Storytime Gathered Round. And I think they are scheduling out the summer right now for author children's and YA authors to be on to read some of their stories to the kids. So definitely come check us out here on Blog Talk Radio under the World of Ink Network to our upcoming shows throughout the summer. It will be a little bit of a lighter schedule because we are trying to enjoy somewhat of our summer break. So it won't be as jam-packed, but we do have stuff going on. So just check in periodically, and if you see something, just set a little reminder. So, don't forget that we're going to be on. All right? And we thank everybody for listening to us, and we hope you all have a great week. And definitely check out In All Things, Giving Thanks When Hope Seems Lost. Like Irene said, definitely have a box of tissues next to you. It is definitely a story that will make you cry. There's no way you can't read that story and not feel your heartstrings being tugged. So, anyways, thank you all again, and have a great week. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Follow me to the World of Ink.